What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host, back from the road, back in studio. He's Thomas Trance. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Drance, what's going on, man?
Hey, I'm doing well. Back off the road. I had a lot of travel.
You said that as if I was accusing you of not doing well. You're like, hey, I'm doing just fine, thanks.
I'm good, buddy.
I've got my life together, yeah. All right?
I'm about to call you buddy with that, like, unique, like, that's not friendly at all. Signature? Hey, no, I'm doing well. The truth is that this is a busy week.
Yeah.
This is, like, a busy week, a stressful week. You know, this weekend, there was a lot to do on my end anyway, so I'm definitely running on fumes, looking forward to getting this week in the book, and look, there's going to be a lot of reports, a lot of rumors, a lot of scuttlebutt. The demand for information is high. The ability to supply that information is limited, right? It's a week that's very easy to overreact to based on what you're hearing and on and on. And I think we'll get into it a little bit more on the whiteboard, but you're already starting to see people do the thing that I think it's important for us not to do, although I totally encourage our listeners to engage with Canucks content however they see fit. But where people are, like, preemptively mad about moves that haven't happened.
They're pre-mad. They're pre-upset about stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna set a show rule. No getting pre-mad. Right.
This is going to be a tough one.
Yeah, I know. Look, I'm throwing down the gauntlet. And by the way, this is going
to
be...
we're going to try to rise to the occasion, I guess.
This is it's going to be harder for me than it is for you. But no getting pre-mad this week.
Okay.
We are going to be calm and rational, digesting all deadline intel.
We're going to do our very best. Now, there might be some stuff that has already happened that we can get mad about.
Absolutely.
We'll get into that. Kevin Woodley will join us at 1 o'clock as well. But of course, as you mentioned, there's a lot going on. It's trade deadline week, so let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks. Today is March 3rd. The headline is the Canucks are back home after, is disastrous too strong a word? A disastrous 1-4 road trip? A deeply disappointing 1-4 road trip?
No, you can use disastrous.
I think disastrous is fair. I mean, the only thing that stopped me is that because of, like, the other teams didn't fully take advantage of it. You know, the teams around them in the playoff picture.
Utah did.
A little bit. They lost again on the weekend, though.
Yeah, but to a good opponent.
So that was the only thing that gave me pause, but purely based, like, on...
You weren't looking at that game against the Devils and assuming they'd get 2 points from it anyway.
No, that's fair.
Yeah, so they beat the Canucks, which they had to do.
But that was the only thing that gave me pause, but purely judged based on the performance of the Canucks themselves and the record they amassed. Yeah, that was a disastrous road trip.
I think disastrous is fair because it's not like they left the door open to the Chase Pack teams. It's like they ripped the door off its hinges. And by the way, they were Jim Hiller aiming a Gatling gun at his own feet away from going 0-5.
Mm-hmm.
Truly. So, you know, and even then, the LA Kings failing to score on a 33% power play opportunity in overtime from going 0-4-1. I mean, you know, they were unlucky against the Seattle Kraken. It was by far their best performance of the road trip. You know, I don't want to do the Herm Edwards, they can build on that or anything, but at least the last time we saw the team play, they played well despite a disappointing result. But man, I mean, you can't afford to have a stretch like that, especially against teams in and around you at this time of year. That was at the very least, it was a devastating road trip.
Yes, very much so. And as you said, you know, Utah, that was a crucial one that they had to have, really, and Utah gets it.
Can anyone make the hockey argument for why the Canucks will outlast the Utah Hockey Club over the balance?
Considering some of the personnel stuff going on with the Canucks right now, I don't think
That's the thing. Like, we don't know. Quinn Hughes is something of a question mark. And in the three games that he played, by the way, right? Like, it's not like he could play 28 minutes a night the way that he has at the peak of his powers regularly over the course of this season. And You know, I thought he looked more like the best offensive defenseman on the planet as opposed to one of the five best players on the planet. And that's not criticism of a player who, like, credit to you for working this hard to get back and being this intent on helping your team, like, at the tail end of one of the greatest individual seasons in Canucks history. Like, we doff our cap to you, sir. It's a privilege to watch you play. But there is a huge gulf between, yeah, hey, this guy's having the sort of individual impact that MacKinnon does, and, hey, this guy's more like one of the best defensemen on the planet. Like, that's the level that Hughes had been at, and frankly, the level the Canucks need him to be at, given what's going on with Demko, given what's going on with Pettersson.
It really just highlights how good they have needed him to be, how incredibly, incredibly good.
And how much they've needed him to play.
Yeah. And then you see what it looks like, or what it can look like, when either he's not in the lineup or he's in the lineup, but not quite at the level that we are used to him being at. So I don't think we need to dwell on the road trip too much, right? Even, you know, obviously we haven't been on the air since the game against the Kraken, but they played all right. But I don't think it was the kind of game where it's like, oh man, how could they have lost?
No, I thought they got unlucky.
Oh, a little unlucky, a little bit.
I thought they got pretty unlucky.
But teams get unlucky.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? It's not like an outright, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they lost that one. They were so good in that game. It's not that.
I think they easily could have been, like, the meta for that game would have been them being up like 4-1. After 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they probably win that game then.
I don't know. I didn't think it was that impressive. Like, it was fine. But I feel like we're grading on a curve a little bit, though, with the Canucks.
I genuinely thought that was like a performance where they were able to generate, where they were able to skate and attack with some speed, where they had all multiple forward lines going. Like, I thought that was a game that they easily should have and could have won by multiple goals. I don't know that we've seen that many. That wasn't even a coin flip game. Like, the Canucks have won some coin flip games. That wasn't one of those. Like, the Canucks were materially better and outperformed their opponent, and it just didn't matter.
Yeah, it did not matter ultimately, and they lose another game. So the other headline here is, as we wait a couple of days until the Canucks get going again and play their final game before the trade deadline on Wednesday against Anaheim, the other headline is, it is, of course, trade deadline week. And before we dive into the broadsheet portion and really dig into a lot of the reporting that's out there, the rumors, all of that, because there was a ton of it today, as you would expect, I think it's worth just taking a pause here and kind of looking at exactly where the Canucks stand and how that should inform what management does over the course of this week, what management does before Friday's trade deadline. I'm going to do my best to do it without getting mad at what might happen, but just to kind of lay out where things are. So they are tied with the Flames, 65 points in 60 games, but the Flames are in a playoff spot by virtue of having the regulation win tiebreaker. St. Louis is a point back with a couple extra games played.
But
Utah's
they are
two
tied
points back
by point percentage.
They are tied by points percentage, yes. So they're in the middle of a pack chasing that second wild card spot.
I mean, the thing is, though, is that the Flames aren't going to make it. So it's Utah or Vancouver.
I don't know. I wouldn't write the Flames off.
I know.
Again, over a 20-game sample?
It's going to be Utah or Vancouver.
All right. But I think beyond just the, well, they're on the fringes of the playoff race, or they're a fringe playoff team, I think the other, and I know they talked about this, Sattenbeck on the postgame show over the weekend as well. Like, the other important thing to keep in mind here as you're evaluating this team, they're on pace for 89 points. So, yes, they are right there for the final wild card spot. But the final wild card spot in the West last year, I think, had what, like 98 or 99 points, Nashville? It was a much higher bar than it is this year. And that matters to me, because you're not just evaluating your chances to make the playoffs. You're evaluating your chances to actually do something once you get there. And that's very different if you're an 89 point team versus a 99 point team. So, like, I think almost as much as I don't even care that much about, oh, hey, just get into the playoffs, right? Like, yeah, no, you're probably going to get soundly beaten in the first round. But even the playoff thing, I think, is kind of fooling us a little bit at this point, because it's like, yeah, they're in the playoff race, but only because the West has been really, really bad at that, you know, that portion of the standings this year. And in a lot of years, they'd be in like 11th place right now. They'd be an afterthought already. How can you not be a seller when you're on pace for 89 points?
There's no middle class in the Western Conference is really what's happened. Like, the Canucks are a one team middle class who've had a nightmare season.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it, you know, and sort of to your point of, you know, in terms of it impacting your chances of going anywhere, like, one thing to strongly consider is in competition over the course of the season, head-to-head, interconference, the East has dominated, like crushed the West to the tune of, you know, like a 0.05 gap in point percentage in head-to-head games between Eastern and Western teams. So I wouldn't just look at this as like the Canucks are eighth in the West or have a shot to be eighth in the West. I would look at it as like there's probably a tier of four or five teams in the East, the Bruins, the Rangers, mm-hmm. the Blue Jackets, the Senators, the Detroit Red Wings, that are materially better than all but seven Western teams. You know what I'm saying? Like the Canucks could be in 12th in the East, and that's one thing to consider here because, hey, the Canucks are in a playoff race, so they, you know, have to be mindful of short-term priorities is sort of one thing to say, but it's another thing to be like the Canucks shouldn't sell at all at the deadline when on true talent they might be something like the 19th best team in hockey, right? Like they have the 17th best point percentage at the moment tied with Ottawa and New York. If New York was lining up against Vancouver in a seven-game series, who you taking?
New York.
With a bullet, right?
And what a series that would be.
It'd be a lot of fun. So, you know, more than anything, it's just something to keep in mind that, like, that this team's not even a playoff caliber team and, frankly, is not in the top 16 in the NHL by point percentage as we sit.
Yeah, it's more like a quirk of the Western Conference this year that has made the playoffs still such a realistic possibility for them. But there's a lot of seasons and a lot of different conferences over the years that we'd be talking about this season very differently already.
Over under. Okay. I'm going to give you over under. The Canucks' realistic ceiling this season. 1.5 wins versus Winnipeg in the first round.
Oh, man. I'd probably take over just because it's hockey and so many weird things can happen. That's why I would do it. But like, even then, it's like, well, so what? You know what I mean? So you get to game six, like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not like the over is a massive vote of confidence there.
I'm saying though, you have to bet it there. Like you would bet the over?
No, but you said like ceiling.
Oh no, I'm saying this is what I'm saying as the ceiling. Would you bet the over or the under? 1.5 wins against Winnipeg in the first
round. Would I right now, would I take
the over or the under? Yeah.
Sorry.
I was picking their ceiling. Like I'm setting their ceiling at this. Would you actually bet with any confidence the over? At even
more. Are you saying if they are matched up with Winnipeg in the first round?
Or be matched up
against? From this point?
From this point on.
Oh, well, then I'll take the under.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like they could miss the playoffs.
Yeah, of course.
That's like something you have to price in.
Yeah.
Okay. So you would take the under at even money at pick'em odds?
Yes, of course. Because they could easily miss the playoffs.
2-1 odds? How high do I have to make the odds before you have to think about it?
I don't know. That's a great question.
So my point is that's a pretty low bar for you to be hesitating.
Yeah.
That's something that I think you have to weigh pretty, like if there's no realistic path for you to do anything of consequence short term, then you have to approach the short term with that due weight. That's it.
Yeah. And again, that's just to me, there's so many, before we get into the broad sheet here, there are so many factors that are kind of screaming sell in all caps, right? Like big neon all caps letters saying sell. And it's the team performance. It's the question around top players, most notably Quinn Hughes right now, but also Elias Pettersson and Thatcher Demko. I think you could say it's a seller's market forming right now. Like you look at what Gustav Nyquist goes for and you think about Brock Besser as a potential rental to sell. There's a lot going on here that to me points in one direction, and that is the team should be operating as a seller, at least in large part, because I understand there's always the possibility of doing a little bit of both. Okay, we'll go into the broadsheet here, and first we'll start with Brock Besser. And I think the dominant theme of reporting on Brock Besser today, like there is a lot of, well, hey, they could keep him past the deadline. There is a lot of that. And that's from Dhaliwal. That's from Nick Kyprios on Halford and Brough today. That's from Satyar Shah, Darren Dreger. Like it's just an overwhelming kind of cascade of people saying that. Now, so that is, I think, as you said, like, let's not do the getting pre-mad at something thing. That's the number one thing that people are getting pre-mad about today.
That's
is the idea
one.
Of keeping Brock Besser as an own rental past the deadline.
We will see for sure. I don't have the latest as we sit. I'm sure I'll have more as the week goes on. But what I can tell you is the own rental thing was discussed to me in sort of multiple different ways over the course of the past month. In the wake of the JT Miller and Marcus Pettersson acquisition two-step, it was sort of suggested to me that, you know, the Canucks would be comfortable potentially keeping some own rentals, but Besser might be a different animal just given his overall value and the risk of him walking. It was then suggested to me right before the Four Nations break that, hey, look, if we're in it, if we're confident we're making the playoffs, if we perform well between now and the deadline,
yeah,
then we'd certainly consider it. Well, they haven't done that.
No, they've done the opposite.
So, I don't have the temperature check, but I would imagine that this team's performance, and frankly, Besser's performance too, I thought this was a pretty tough road trip for him personally. You know, would have to play some role in how the organization considers this. Look,
because I will say the one thing about this week is you always have to try to take a step back and kind of think about who does this serve having certain things out there, right? What's the attempt to control the message and all that? And if you are looking at trading a player like Brock Besser, you don't necessarily want teams around the league to think you're desperate to do so or that you have to do so by the deadline. You want to create a sense as much as you can that, hey, we're okay. Yeah, hey, we got to keep him. That's fine. He's our own rental. We have no problem doing that. I don't know if that's what's happening here, but that is one possible explanation that the Canucks are just trying to get that idea out there, build some leverage against teams that might be interested in acquiring Besser, right? So they don't seem to be acting from a position of desperation. That's definitely something that is that's possible here to explain why there's been so much reporting about the possibility of keeping him as an own rental. The other thing I want to say on Brock Besser, go ahead.
I want to get into just the shape of this really quick. Are we in broadsheet?
Yes.
Okay, because Friedman had the 32 thoughts note that he thought 45-ish million would get it done.
Yes.
Something like that. Well, that's what?
So that is, by my math, 6 years at 7.5.
Right. Or, you know, 8 and a bit over, like, 8.6.
Over five. Yeah.
Okay, so that's not that high.
No, to me,
a sticker shock amount.
If you 6 years at 7.5, considering what we were talking about in the summer.
I guess it's 9 times 5, but yeah.
Yeah. Considering what we were talking about at this, I do love that it's actually like one of the, it's not even a fraction involved and we didn't get it. Yeah. We were like, I don't know, 8 point something.
Go it's us.
Like, no.
Nine on the dot.
That's an easy one, guys. Anyways.
Did we get it right, German Jamie? 9.
Sorry. Considering some of the numbers we were talking about in the summer and even earlier this year, like 6 years at $7.5 million, that's a hometown discount. That's not even close to sticker shock. That's like, oh wow, that's a nice deal for them. If you're not willing to go there, and again, this is just per Elliott Friedman. We'll see. Lots of things could unfold over the week. You're drawing a very hard line in the sand.
Correct.
And I think that has to be accounted for in the own rental discussion as well. Because, okay, I think the own rental thing is not worth considering, really. But I guess if you think, hey, we actually do want to keep this player, we're willing to make it work. Yeah, it gives him more leverage, but whatever. We think we can get it done. Okay, whatever. But if you're not willing to go to $45 million, if you're not willing to go to 6 years at 7.5, I mean, it's over. It's over at that point. So why not just rip the Band-Aid off and do it now? And again, that's per Elliott Friedman, but that really stood out to me that $45 million total value is probably what would get it done in Friedman's eyes, but he's not sure the Canucks would go there. And I think if you're not willing to go there, that tells you an awful lot about how the Canucks view the player and how this might unfold here over the next week and going into the summer. Also from Elliott Friedman, says that a big gap remains between the Canucks and pending unrestricted free agent Pew Suter, and he's not sure they're going to be able to bridge it. And that's really the first concrete reporting of any sort that we've heard on where things stand with Pew Suter, and sounds pretty similar to the Brock Besser, just on a smaller scale.
Yeah, I mean, Pew Suter should be able to get 3.5-ish, 4 million in unrestricted free agency, and kind of needs to do it after he spent the last 2 years providing the Canucks with $3.5 million worth of value at 1.6. So you can understand why that would be a tricky one from the player's perspective. He needs to get a big deal here, or at least some security, given his level of contribution. And, you know, I think you can understand why the Canucks would be reluctant to do it. Although, I don't know, I think Pew Suter plays winning hockey. So I don't think he's easy to replace by any means. I want to come back to Besser. So the shape of the trade deadline, and the shape of what's been reported by a variety of people, some of it even coming from me over the last little bit, is as follows. Besser clearly wants to stay. Okay. The trade deadline is a very useful moment to test pending unrestricted free agents and their desire to stay. Right. You have stories, past stories in Canucks history. When Alex Burrows signed the 4x2, right, they literally had a trade worked out when they offered him the trade.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Alex, this is the number, or we're going to trade you. Knowing that he would want to stay, they got one of the great values in Canucks history done. This is leverage. This is the last week remaining where the Canucks will have meaningful leverage in talks with a player who reportedly, by all accounts, wants to stay. If he doesn't give now, right? Like, if he doesn't cave now in terms of what space exists in contract talks and has existed for a long time, there's been very little momentum, but both sides have a good sense of what they want, right? Of what it would take to get the deal done. If he doesn't cave now, he's not going to cave the closer you get to July 1. Like, this is it. This is the moment.
Especially after you forego your chance to move him for assets.
Correct.
And now you're staring at him walking away for nothing.
Correct. So all you do, like, I think this is a complicated one, right? The cap's going up. It's going to be pretty hard to find good enough players to justify spending on, frankly, given that environment. Besser is a really good player. He's going to be no worse than, what, the fourth best winger on the market. You're going to have sort of Rantanen, Marchand, I guess.
Marner.
But Marchand's 36.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rantanen, Marner, Ehlers.
Right.
The three clearly ahead of him, I would say.
For sure. And then it's like Besser, Brock Nelson.
Yeah.
You know, but even Brock Nelson is 33 going on 85, right? So the truth is that Besser is going to be one of the five top free agent wingers available. He's going to get his money if the Canucks wait. And the closer you get to July 1, the harder it is to give a player something that makes them consider foregoing that unrestricted free agent offer as you go. If the issue is price, we like Besser, but only at X number, which has been my understanding of the Canucks posture here. You're either going to get him to agree to your number this week or it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, you know, I don't have a huge issue with the team signing Besser, right? Do I think it's what this team needs given the unique and relatively dire circumstances they find themselves in? I don't. But I also think that in this environment, it makes sense to keep good players at fair numbers.
Yeah, and I don't think it probably wouldn't be my choice, but it's not a disaster. It's not like, oh, I can't believe they did that.
Well, my issue about it has nothing to do with Besser. It has to do with like, hey, this team needs to pull like eight rabbits out of eight hats to get back on track at this point, given sort of where they've gotten themselves to. So I'd like to see them figure out a way to be more creative and chase more upside. But good player, good contract, never a bad thing. I'm never going to get too worked up about it if that's how this plays out. In the event that Besser is dealt, even if the Canucks turn around and use some of those assets to buy, I think that makes sense. If the team holds him, though, I think it's pretty hard to explain the logic there.
Yes. I can't see it.
It's not their season. It's not their season. They'll immediately lose leverage with the player. The risk they'll take on is cataclysmic for a team, you know, as light on value as the Canucks are. There's no good reason, no good explanation. And the truth is, too, that by like how much do you even think it dings your playoff odds?
He's not playing well right now.
He's not.
I don't know. You're not scoring already. You cannot score with him. You cannot score without him.
Yeah. So the uncertainty thing only goes one way. It only goes to when you acquire draft picks. Well, you don't need that's magic beans. But it never applies to a team's playoff odds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which are also magic beans with far, far less upside. Generally speaking.
Last thing I'll mention here in the broadsheet was Satyar Shah on Halford and Brough this morning saying, quote, almost everything is on the table for them at the deadline. And he's referring to buying, you know, maybe cheap rentals, players with term who are more high end, selling aggressively, facilitating deals as a third party because they have a lot of cap space. Basically, expect activity, but in what direction? Who knows with the Canucks? Because according to Sat, almost everything is on the table for them at the deadline.
And it should be, right?
I have no problem with that.
I think the ideal deadline is to both sell and buy. I'm by no means casting aspersions at this team trying to make the playoffs. I think they should be trying to make the playoffs, and I think they have a realistic shot of doing so. I just think you have to figure out a way to maintain your competitiveness while also seizing the opportunity in front of you in a seller's market,
yes,
and netting some assets with the future in mind while trying to remain competitive, which, by the way, is pretty much in line with the Rutherford Alvin MO since they arrived.
We'll whip through the rest of the whiteboard here. Lineup notes. No practice today. They'll get back on the ice tomorrow. Again, they play next Wednesday in Vancouver against Anaheim. No Hughes at practice yesterday. Tockett calling him day-to-day, said he tweaked something. Of course, he didn't play, the final 9 minutes against the Kraken. Everyone saw the kind of obvious discomfort he was in at different points. It sounds like it's not the oblique. Maybe it's a new thing with Quinn Hughes.
He did talk about having a second injury that cropped up over the course of the past month, in part as a result of sort of weakness in the oblique. So it could be a comp injury,
sure,
that he's tweaked.
So that's the number one thing, I think, to monitor Canucks practice tomorrow and going into the game against Anaheim is Hughes' status. And then we'll see with Thatcher Demko as well. If he gets back on the ice with the team, Tockett said yesterday didn't think it should be too long. But who knows with Thatcher Demko at this point. Playoff standings update. Canucks playoff odds in Dom's model continue to drop, now down to 63%, which is still hilariously high. Calgary, of course, in the final wildcard spot right now after picking up a point in an overtime loss in Carolina. Both teams with 65 points in 60 games, but Calgary has the regulation wins tiebreaker, so they are technically in the second wildcard spot.
Canucks points over under is now at 90.5. Woof. And their odds to make the playoffs -135 to make, still favored over the other Chase Pack teams in the West, +105 to miss.
So basically a coin toss at this point.
Well, a slightly weighted coin toss.
Yeah. All right. That's the whiteboard for today. We will take a break. We got an open segment on the other side. So keep your texts coming in. Lots of thoughts already about the trade deadline. And we'll dig into more of that, what the Canucks should do, some more takeaways from their road trip as well. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.